Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 90-year-old Silver Star recipient Martin Medellin of Madera, California. He went to war as an 18-year-old who had never finished high school. But in the last year, he's received his diploma, and just a couple years ago, he finally got the Purple Heart for wounds suffered nearly 70 years earlier. His friends at VFW Post 1981 surprised him with it. We're going to hear about that. But first, you remember what it was like to get home from the war, get back to Madera, and see your family again?
We got into Boston, I think, the 23rd of December, 45. I got home right at New Year's. Christmas Day, we spent in Chicago coming home. We went downtown, got back on the train to come home, and we were really all happy to be home. And when we got to Camp Beale, I called my cousins in San Jose, and they came and get me. They brought me home, and I got home, and Mom was really surprised, you know. She didn't know I was coming.
Mm.
Yeah, and my dad.
Did you get some of those suffocating hugs where they don't want to let go?
Yeah, really. Yeah, it was really something.
Did they have any idea how close you came to not coming home?
No, they didn't have the idea, no.
And never. You didn't want to tell them?
Didn't tell them, no. I was really lucky. Even like yesterday, my wife was saying, you know, we've really been lucky. Yeah, thinking about all them things. We've really been lucky, our family.
And you mentioned that they talked you into re-enlisting, so you're back in the Army. It's after the war, and that's when you met your wife?
Yeah, I came home on furlough.
Uh-huh.
Came home on leave, and that's when I met her.
Tell me the story. How'd you meet?
It was a friend of mine that came home from World War II, and he got married to a friend of my wife's, and she was a maid of honor. And this friend of mine invited me to his wedding, so I came, and that's when I met my wife.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I got out. Otherwise, I'd have been back in Korea. I would have gone to Korea if I hadn't gotten out. I'd really been lucky, too.
I want to rewind a little bit here with you and ask you a few stories from stuff we talked about earlier, a few questions. You're in San Francisco when they attacked Pearl Harbor, right? And I've heard some stories about that. People were pretty freaked out there, and they thought the Japanese were going to hit San Francisco, right?
Right. They came close. I understand right there by the Golden Gate Bridge, submarine came under close by there.
Well, there's one that fired a few shells by Santa Barbara.
Right.
And then further north, too. In the months that followed Pearl Harbor, was there still kind of that scare going on?
It's kind of scary, yeah.
And I'm interested, your time at the shipyards. What all did you have to do to put those ships together? And what was that operation like?
They had assemblymen that would put them together, and we would weld them. Whatever had to be welded.
And you're doing that nonstop, pretty much, right?
Right.
Because
right.
They were turning those ships out crazy fast,
yeah,
at that time.
Yeah, fast, yeah. Liberty ships.
They still have one there. Have you been on it?
In San Francisco?
Yeah.
No, I haven't been.
It's the SS Jeremiah O'Brien. It's one of the Liberty ships that you guys built during the war, and it actually took troops to Normandy. It was there on D-Day, and it's still operational. They take it out. They have these, it's got that huge steam engine. And they take it out on cruises once a year around the bay. I bet they'd love to have you up there. They've got a little museum on the ship and everything.
I'll be done.
That's a pretty neat deal. So you could have stayed there. You could have kept doing that.
Yeah.
You had an exemption.
Yeah, I could have.
Why didn't you?
Well, like, all my friends were going, and I figured, well, I might as well go too.
Even though it might get you killed.
Yeah, I never did think about that, but even though I wanted to go and fight with them.
Mm-hmm. So you just said that you and your wife were doing this, but I'm just thinking about this here. So your first week of combat, you almost get killed. Plenty of other times the rest of the war. I mean, you've got those P-47s strafing you with German pilots in them. I'm sure there are a lot of times you didn't tell us about where the enemy was shooting at you.
Yeah.
And that if you didn't take them out, they would have taken you out.
Yeah.
But if any of those goes a little different, if that bullet on New Year's Day of 45 is a little inch off and gets your jugular.
Yeah.
You never come home. You never meet your wife.
No.
3 kids, 4 grandkids,
yeah.
Never born.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have been closer. You would have gone a little lower or gone upper. Yeah, it just burned me.
So an inch in any direction, really.
Yeah.
And you're gone.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Well, I can't. A lot of times I keep thinking about it now. Like I said, we've been lucky. I've been lucky.
And I know a few years ago, you got to go to Washington, D.C. and see the World War II Memorial.
I was there when they opened it up.
The day it was dedicated?
Yeah. Uh-huh. 204 when they did it.
Yep.
I was there. My son took me.
What was that like to be there for
it
that?
It was really something because three of the presidents were there. It was really something else. And I never could believe it. They took us all over, and they had pushed me on a wheelchair, and a lot of the comrades used to come in the motorcycles and stop by and shake my hand and all that.
There are a lot of things to look at there at the World War II Memorial. I mean,
right.
I'm sure you found the pillar that says California on it.
Yeah, number one, as you walk in the front gate, California is right there on the first one.
And I'm sure you saw a little storyboard of the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
But right in the middle, behind the fountain, there's a wall with gold stars, 4,000 of them.
Yeah.
Signifying 400,000 Americans who died in the war.
Yeah.
What did you think about while you were there?
I just thought about it could have been me, one of those, you know. But you don't take too much about us other than that.
Did you get your Silver Star while you were still in Europe? Did they pin it on you back there, or did you get it later?
President Eisenhower pinned this on me.
Oh, that's no big deal.
No.
So General Eisenhower pinned the Silver Star on you.
Well, the ribbon. He did that in Frankfurt, Germany.
So that was right after the war ended?
Yeah. You know, actually, just before the war ended.
Uh-huh.
But I never did get to have the medal until we got home.
But so you guys are lined up there, and a bunch of you get called for it, and the general comes to each one of you and pins that on?
Right.
What was that like for you? Here, you're a teenager from Madeira, and the Supreme Commander is pinning something on you.
Well, it was really an honor. It was really something that it's hard to forget.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, nervous. Yeah.
I don't know if it's possible to stand at attention more or better than normal, but I would imagine that might be one of those situations.
Yeah, really. And then your Silver Star got your name in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Got your name in the back.
Did he say anything to you?
Oh, just congratulated me.
Mm-hmm.
Just say a few words, that's it. And not too much he could say.
So they gave you the Silver Star then, but they didn't give you the Purple Heart.
No, they knew to get the Purple Heart.
Even though you were wounded?
Well, yeah, see, that's why I said nobody knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the only one I knew that got shot was Sergeant Peterson, and he got killed right away. The medic that took care of me, he hadn't reported either.
Right.
He was a field medic, you know. So he knew I wasn't really that bad. And really not too many knew that I had gotten shot.
Did you ever think about it over the years? Thinking, you know, I really should have a Purple Heart?
Yeah, I did. I thought about it. But then they used to say that you had to be in a hospital or really draw a lot of blood. Never did think too much about it. But after that, I kept thinking, well, you know, I did draw blood, you know. It wasn't much, but I did. Other than that, nothing I could do. I met the gentleman, Michael, he's done a lot for me.
Because you pretty much gave up, right? You weren't going to do anything about the Purple Heart?
Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to do anything about it. Colonel Michael and Colonel Jones here, they had did a lot for me and got me going.
But they didn't tell you what they were doing.
No.
You had quite a surprise, didn't you?
Quite a surprise, really.
Tell me about that. You show up for something you think is just a regular dinner at your post?
Regular dinner.
And what happened?
And what happened, they called me up to the stage, and I was really surprised. He brought the medal for me, and he gave it to me, and I was really surprised. In fact, I started to cry, because I cry a lot right away, you know.
Nothing wrong with that, Martin.
Yeah, it was really something. It was quite a surprise for me and for my family.
You never expected that to happen, did you?
No, I never did.
So, you've been married 68 years?
Yeah.
So, if I asked Madeline what the secret to being married for 68 years is, what do you think she'd say?
She'll tell you she'd been lucky. In fact, she was telling me yesterday, she said, you know, we've really been lucky. I lost all my brothers, my folks. I don't have nobody else. I'm the only one that left my family.
What would you say is the secret to staying married for 68 years? You know, there's not that many people who can claim that.
Well, I don't know. I guess kind of agreeing with her, when agreeing with the boss, you know.
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear.
Uh-huh.
That's the secret.
All right. And you mentioned your VFW post, post 1981 in Madera, the second oldest post in all of California. And nobody's got you beat. You've been a member of this post longer than anybody. So for almost 70 years, you've been a part of this post. How long were you in charge of that honor guard?
In fact, I still got in charge. I took it over when I was commander also.
Uh-huh.
I was in charge of foreign squad and honor guard, and I still have a lot to do with it.
So you've been doing that for how long? 40, 50 years?
Yeah.
How many funerals do you think you've been a part of? Hundreds, huh?
Quite a few.
Why do you do that?
It's kind of an honor to help especially the families, you know, of the lost them. It's kind of an honor to do that.
Have you had to deal with flashbacks, nightmares, or having those images from the war come back to you?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Still now?
Yeah, I still do. I think a lot of times I wake up and my wife said I kind of poke her a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about a lot of times I wake up at night kind of crying about it.
Mm.
Thinking about my friends that I lost. I used to love to golf a lot. Now I can't even golf. And I lost all my golfing partners now, you know. They're all World War II veterans. And
yeah,
I lost them all now. I haven't golfed in 2 years now no more. But there's nothing you can do now. It's going to live with it.
You said anyone that says they weren't scared is lying.
Yeah.
Is there one moment from all your time over there that maybe scared you the most or took your breath away the most?
Yeah. Well, like I said, going into Saarbrücken, and I was number one scout. I could have been shot any time.
Because you don't know where they are.
No, I didn't know they wasn't there. But I was scared. I was thinking any time they could get me, because they usually get the number one scout or number two scout. And I don't know why the captain chose me to be number one scout going in there, but he chose me to go in as a number one. And like I said, I was scared because I was waiting any time I could get it. And it didn't happen. General Patton was quite a man. I would go with him anytime.
Before I forget, I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, Martin, and thank you for telling me your story. Is there something that you would say you're most proud of?
I think I'm proud of what I've done and what I accomplished. I'm glad that it happened over there instead of here. I wouldn't like it to be here.
Mm.
If it's going to be that, it matter where it was, not here in the United States. And I would do anything for keeping it from coming here.
Mm-hmm.
Even as old as I am now, I would still fight for it not to be here.
I guess I should ask you, too, about this post. If you've been a member for almost 70 years, this must be a pretty special place for you. What have you appreciated about these guys over all these years?
You know, as long as we've been went together, especially the older ones, we have one of the best posts around. And we cooperate a lot together, and everybody just like a brother.
Well, and since we're recording this episode of VFW Post 1981 in Madera, we have a couple of those fellow veterans right here. So let's hear from them real quick. First, it's past Commander Bill Jones. How long have you known Martin?
I've known Martin, we met in 2002. I used to walk by his house every morning since 1990 when I came to Madera with my next door neighbor, Henry Shane. He was in the Army, the Battle of the Bulge. I was in Vietnam. So I'd walk by his house every morning to do our 3 mile jaunt. And this particular day, he's standing outside, and he says, "Hey, you two guys get over here." So he walked over and said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "I can see by your caps that you're military." I said, "Yeah, Marine Corps, proud of it." Henry said, "Army, proud of it." He said, "Did you see any combat?" I said, "Yeah, 29 months in Vietnam." And Henry was the Battle of the Bulge. He said, "How come you're not in the VFW post?" I said, "Nobody asked." He said, "Well, I'm asking, you know, get your butts down there." So the following Thursday, we showed up to the meeting. Like Martin says, the camaraderie here is just outstanding. You know, we don't sit here and drink beer and play poker and swap war stories. We served our country. Now we serve our community.
How he recruited you for the VFW. If we took a poll of the membership here at Post 1981, how many of them do you think would say the same thing, that that's how they ended up here?
Oh, probably half of them.
And what do you guys call Martin around here?
The General.
You've got quite a war story yourself from Vietnam, but when you hear his story about that Silver Star, what strikes you?
I think it should have been a Congressional Medal of Honor. You save, you know, 283 men, and you put your life on the line, then I think it should have been the Congressional Medal of Honor rather than the Silver Star. He's just a fantastic individual. Anytime I think about saying, "Well, I'm going to take a rest," he says, "I'm 90 years old. You rest after I rest."
He sets the bar pretty high, doesn't
he? Yes, he does. And we really love him.
That is pretty hard to miss around here. And I want you to hear from one more voice. You've heard it on this show before if you're a regular listener. Mike DeCesar put in a lot of hours to secure that long-awaited Purple Heart for Martin because he thinks the world of him, too.
I met Martin when I joined this post in 2009. I heard his story, and I felt I wanted to help him. I helped him get what he waited so many years for. Although he wore the stripes of a sergeant, to me, he is a general. I was in World War II at age 16 in 1943, but I was in submarines, and I have the greatest respect in the world for Martin and anyone who put their boots on the ground in foreign soil. So to me, Martin, he may not be commissioned as a general, but to me, he is a five-star general.
Well, I know those words mean a whole lot to Martin Madellan, and it's nice for us to have that extra perspective, too. Find a photo of these three amigos from Post 1981 at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We're out of time this time. I'm Paul Leffler saying thanks so much for listening and reminding you again, as Martin Madellan knows oh so well, that freedom is not free.